On April 22nd, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld a Michigan constitutional amendment that bans affirmative action in admissions to the state's public universities. The 6-2 ruling effectively endorsed similar measures in 7 other states and may encourage additional states to pass new laws banning consideration of race in admissions policy. This is the 3rd affirmative action case from the state of Michigan to be decided by the Supreme Court. In 2003, the court struck down a plan from the University of Michigan Undergraduate College in which a point system gave specific weight to minority applicants. But the court upheld the University of Michigan Law School's admission policy because it was more generalized. Then conservatives in Michigan pushed through an amendment to the state constitution forbidding any consideration of race in the admissions process. That referendum question was approved in 2006 with 58% of the vote. But the amendment was challenged by a coalition of student and minority rights groups who won their case at the appellate level but lost in this recent Supreme Court ruling. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with Jamie Raskin, a professor of constitutional law at American University, a Maryland state senator, and a senior fellow with the group People for the American Way. Here he talks about the significance of this latest high court ruling and suggests alternative methods of rectifying historic discrimination.
Essentially, what the court has done is to say that affirmative action and the use of race in admissions or in hiring can be forbidden by a state by virtue of state constitutional amendment or even just by virtue of state law. What the court has said basically is that if a state wants to use affirmative action within the strict limits it has imposed in the past, it can do so. But if it wants to forbid the use of affirmative action, it can forbid it too.
I've read that the percentages of Black and Latino students, at least in the more prestigious universities, has dropped significantly since some of these other affirmative action restrictions have been put in place. So these cases have a real-world impact.
The withdrawal of affirmative action has meant that the numbers of minority students at the most selective universities and colleges has plummeted. On the other hand, in Texas, after their racial affirmative action plan was struck down, they moved to a different plan which guaranteed admission to the University of Texas and other state universities and colleges to the top 5% of the graduating class in each high school all over the state. So that guaranteed a kind of geographic distribution that allowed for diversity. So there are other mechanisms that states are starting to put in place to deal with both state law and their hostile affirmative action and to the Supreme Court decision.
Jamie Raskin, over the course of all the decisions on affirmative action over the decades, how far-reaching is this one, do you think?
Most of the main damage had already been done. I mean, there's really not much left of affirmative action. The court permits generally state universities and colleges to have generalized kinds of targets, but it can never make a difference in a particular case, and it can't be quantified, and you can't set aside certain numbers. There is a movement to try to get colleges and universities to engage in affirmative action based on economic disadvantage, which obviously will help to lift up a lot of racial and ethnic minorities, as well as poor and working class white people. You know, in general, I think that progressive movements are focused now on questions of student debt and how to make college more affordable for everybody. And in some sense, these questions may be more congruent with what the original civil rights movement was interested in, which was dramatic changes in people's access to higher education and to jobs. So there may be a way in which the right-wing assault on affirmative action, which is simply ferocious and unremitting, could lead us to go back to the demand for universal rights and benefits and entitlements, you know, in the educational field. You know, in Europe today, everybody essentially has the right to a college education. You know, once you get in, it's tough, you've got to work hard and so on, but everybody has a right to go. And that would be something that could be put on the table today. You know, just like universal health care could be put on the table today. So instead of beginning with the assumption of scarcity and dividing up, you know, a scarce resource according to some, you know, racial or ethnic criterion, instead start with the assumption that everybody should have access to health care, everybody should have access to college education if that's something that they want to do. Because, you know, what we have today is a Supreme Court that is very hostile to the Reconstruction Amendment, specifically the 14th Amendment and Equal Protection, which was not just about the formal treatment of people as equals, but it was about actually changing a profoundly racist society and trying to redistribute wealth, power, and social opportunities to people who had been marginalized and oppressed by law and by social convention for centuries.
There's a certain stigma for people of color getting admitted to institutions of higher education through affirmative action, the assumption being they wouldn't have gotten in otherwise. Do you think that race-based affirmative action was never the best way to go?
You know, if you go back and look at the politics of the civil rights movement in the 60s and the writings of civil rights leaders, there was very little discussion of affirmative action. There was a lot of discussion about dismantling structures of discrimination and exclusion and then redistributing opportunities and wealth and power to bring everybody in. So it was much more concerned with a vision of real democratization rather than, you know, adding a few people here and adding a few people there. So, you know, I like much better the image of the civil rights movement of creating movements to change the nature of society rather than assuming somehow the superiority or the virtue of particular institutions that were racist and exclusionary and elitist and reactionary for centuries and just trying to get a few people into those institutions. And I just think that the civil rights movement would be better off today, or progressive movements generally, fighting for universal rights and entitlements for everybody.
That was Maryland State Senator Jamie Raskin, a professor of constitutional law at American University and a senior fellow with the group People for the American Way. For more perspectives on affirmative action in higher education, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.